And welcome to Perspectives, and joining us on the book club today is Peter Johnston. Peter is the author of the book, Weapons of Peace, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Weapons of Peace. I should read what it says under Weapons of Peace. It says, "The Nurse, the Negotiator, and Hitler's Atom Bomb." If that doesn't capture you, well, you need to just even read just the first segment, and you'll be engaged in Mr. Johnston's book. But let me tell you a little bit more about Peter. Peter is the author, as I just mentioned, of also another book, Negotiating with Giants. And he is also with the managing director of NAI. It's a boutique consulting firm founded in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute, but let's take the time to welcome Peter Johnston. Thank you, Peter, for being with us.
It's my pleasure to be speaking with you, Louis. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Now, as I mentioned, we talked about you working as the managing director for NAI, but before we get into that, I want to go back a little bit deeper in your past, not to expose dark secrets or anything like that, but as you know, when you were growing up, were you always intrigued by negotiating spies and James Bond, all that kind of stuff?
I'm lying down on my couch now. I hope that's okay, Louis. So I'm just going to, you know, treat you like my therapist.
Okay.
I absolutely had an interest in international intrigue, politics, and conflict. And my mother was a leading activist and played a strong role in being anti-nukes. I had a father who was a businessman. And those two interests in terms of business and social activism combined in me to have this interest in influence and negotiation and how we can make the world a better place and our own lives better through the art and science of negotiation. I didn't fully think of it that way when I was growing up, but that's what it's evolved to.
So let's talk a little bit about how that perhaps helped you on the playground or in school.
That's a deep question. I think my parents, by the way, were divorced, and so I was in our family of seven, very much the glue that negotiated differences between my parents from the age of 8 to 9, and as I got older as well. So I was playing that mediation role inside my own family, as I'm sure many of your listeners can relate to, and that evolved along with my interest in business and international affairs into the role that I play today.
And that's interesting that you mentioned that about being the negotiator in the family, because I like reading biographies. I like reading about history. And one of the biographies that I read was about Michael Landon, Eugene Horowitz. But he grew up in a very troubled family, and he remembers his mother saying, "Tell your father to come to dinner." And his father would say, "Tell your mother I'm not hungry." Awkward position.
Right. And yes, I was certainly immersed in those dynamics. My father went on to marry several other women, and I would then go on to play mediation roles with them as well. So I suppose that comfort and seeing that comfort in playing that role and seeing the positive impact of what I could do from the youngest age, while not full of joy always, of course, for a young boy, did prepare me certainly for some of the difficult circumstances I come across as an advisor and negotiator on behalf of corporations and governments around the world.
We're speaking with Peter Johnston. Peter is the author of the novel Weapons of Peace, The Nurse, The Negotiator, and Hitler's Atom Bomb. After you left grade school, high school, went on to the university, tell us about your plans there. Did they change a little bit, or were they pretty much the same still as you were a child?
I started off as a journalist, and my training was in journalism, and I was actually on the nightly news as a television journalist covering politics, trade deals, etc. And our funding got cut off at one point, and I'm sure you can relate to funding issues, and on a particular story related to AIDS, actually, and going deep on the issue of AIDS and how to try to manage it and find a cure. This was in the 80s, and our budget just arbitrarily got cut one day for doing this work that I viewed as so important. And I decided then, Louis, I wanted to run television stations and media rather than be fall victim to cuts like that and make the decisions on priorities. And so I went back. I did an MBA at Harvard Business School, where I came across and met, and he became my mentor, Howard Rafa, who is a peer of John Nash's of A Gorgeous, A Beautiful Mind, the movie. And Howard was an expert in negotiation analysis, and I moved under his wing, and he was an advisor to me for years after starting my own firm that advises governments and companies.
So as we listen to newscasts, we watch television, we listen to the radio, we read an article in a newspaper or a magazine, we hear about these high-stake negotiations going on, and even, you know, back to when the United States was first founded. I mean, there were negotiations even over the end of the Civil War, what was to be and not to be. When you're watching that, did that kind of trigger you and get you ready for doing high-stakes negotiations, which you're doing now? And I'll talk a little bit about that in just a minute.
I think that evolved over time, and certainly the complexities of what I deal with. I'm somewhat unique, Louis, in that I will advise high net worth couples on how to divorce effectively, for example, as sort of a mediator, or I'll advise one party to that negotiation, a man or a woman. And that's obviously not the core of what I do, but I'm mentioning that for a reason, because my work obviously extends into advising on trade deals, on mergers and acquisitions, on civil wars, working with the UN, working with the World Bank in Asia as well, on complex issues of influence and how to get people working collaboratively together. So going back to the marriage piece of that, you say, well, gosh, that's a far cry from dealing internationally with such complex negotiations. But in fact, any of your listeners, and you perhaps, would know that honestly, the negotiations inside a house between children and their parents, between children themselves, are very complex. Nothing is simple in influence. There is always a thread, the single relationship thread that runs through all of your dealings with a given person in different capacities. And we'll speak about this later, perhaps, but that's what President Trump is finding right now in his dealings with China, and may well learn even more about this in the weeks ahead, that when you pull on one part of that relationship string, it affects all other areas. It creates a tension. And so that's the same in marriage, but it's also the same in international trade dealings.
And of course, you mentioned in marriage, we heard, of course, of the Bezos Amazon divorce. We've heard of other celebrities who are going through divorce. And some people say, well, you know, we don't have that much money. We're not that well off. So everything should be simple. But as you just discussed, nothing is simple.
Well, no. And that's the funny thing. In most dealings, actually, the Bezos is just one example of that with his wife, Mackenzie. But the fact is often when there is more resource, you would think it would be easier to figure out how to divide that value. But it actually just raises expectations for both parties to want more than is available. So the Bezos did a good job behind the scenes keeping that private, because they had the overall interest, no doubt, of their children and how they'd be affected by their ongoing negotiations. They did it behind the scenes, and it seems like it was an appropriate outcome for both of them.
We're visiting with award-winning author Peter Johnston. He is the author of the novel Weapons of Peace, The Nurse, The Negotiator, and Hitler's Atom Bomb. Peter is also managing director of NAI, and that's a boutique consulting firm founded in Cambridge, Massachusetts. As I was reading some of these facts and figures that I got from your publicist, one of the things that really popped out at me is one of your clients, you had to negotiate the return of stolen artwork. Sounds like a movie.
So I get emails in, Louis, to my inbox, you know, like the Nigerian prince who's looking to give me $1 million or whatever it is. I actually have to read those, because I don't know whether it's a real client who's coming in to me or whether it's just a lark. By the way, to your listeners, most of those are larks. don't respond to the Nigerian businessman looking for money. but in this case, yes, you know, whether it's recovering artwork for a gallery or doing any of the other negotiations from spouses to international affairs, I am very fortunate to be in a position where I can advise on such a vast array of negotiations. And it really, I'm lucky because there was a unique moment in time in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where a number of us came together to do this kind of work with Roger Fisher, a law school professor at Harvard, and Howard Rafa, who was at the business school.
So we're visiting with Peter Johnston. Peter is the author of the book Weapons of Peace, a novel about the nurse, the negotiator, and Hitler's atom bomb. We've been discussing some of Peter's work as a negotiator. And right now, you mentioned earlier President Trump and, of course, the negotiations that are going on or have to go on, China, North Korea, Vietnam, Britain, Europe, everything that's going on right now. And some people will probably say, well, you know, Peter, it's okay to negotiate and perhaps offer these things, but it's hard when you're dealing with someone who's always used to being the boss. It's his business, his company. And so when somebody else tries to advise him or tell him something, that's kind of difficult.
Well, it is, because basically, at the core, and this is a theme that it runs through Weapons of Peace, my novel, which I believe is the first novel ever to delve into the art and science of negotiation. Like Grisham, who would delve into the law, this delves into negotiation, and readers learn about negotiation through a thriller. And that was my goal, to get these skills out to as many people as possible, is why I moved away from nonfiction. And so as a reader, you can learn core principles in negotiation. And one of them starts with mindset and strategy, Louis, which applies whether it's the marriage, whether it's an art gallery trying to recover art, or whether it's international trade negotiations. The principle is this, that we have measured over time, studied scientifically as well in practice through thousands of different cases, and found that the best mindset for achieving the best deals is one that is collaborative and forthcoming, as we say. It is focused on making the pie as big as possible and then figuring out who gets what size a piece of that pie. But the initial discussion that is critical is how big that pie is going to be. And that pie gets bigger the better the relationship is between the parties, the more open communication is, so we can talk truly about our interests, explore different options for meeting those interests, applying standards to those options to see what's the most appropriate outcome in this particular negotiation, and then making a decision collaboratively as to whether we work together or we go our separate ways. We don't threaten each other. That is what achieves excellence in negotiation when we look at what the best negotiators across history have done, which I explore in Negotiating with Giants, Get What You Want Against the Odds, my first book. So it's just to say that in all of these negotiations, the thing that you can take solace in is remembering what I just said, is that it is not a value-claiming, aggressive, positional approach in negotiations that yields the best outcomes. It is a collaborative, forthcoming one where you are clear about the game at hand, how we are going to deal with each other if you and I are in a negotiation, Louis. And then I'm clear about the game. I'm also clear about the incentives to defect and how you might want to defect, and if you defected, what I would do. And I'm provocable. The third part of this overall strategy and mindset is that I'm collaborative, forthcoming, I'm clear about the game, I'm provocable if you defect from what we agreed to. But then finally, a critical piece is that I'm forgiving, in that I can forgive you for a breach. Doesn't mean I'll do business with you again, but it may mean I do business with you again, but I'll make sure I'm protected the next time I do business with you if you've defected from me, violated the terms and conditions of one of our deals. And the reason I would do that, and this applies to domestic relationships as well, is that continuing to deal with you must continue to meet my interests. And if it does, I'm not going to hurt myself by not forgiving you.
We're visiting with Peter Johnston. Peter is the author of the book, Weapons of Peace, The Nurse, The Negotiator, and Hitler's Atom Bomb, a novel. And Peter is also a negotiator, and he's been talking about some of the issues that are involved in negotiating something big, small, in the family or outside the family. But we're going to talk a little bit about the book now, Weapons of Peace. And it opens up with some very interesting facts, because a lot of people, sometimes when they read a pick up a book, sometimes they may not know the history prior to what happened, but you do an excellent job of putting down the facts. For example, early 1943, the Allies attacked Nazi facilities in occupied Norway to slow Germany's progress in developing a nuclear weapon. Word circulated among Nazi officials in the streets of Berlin that a wonder weapon had finally developed and tested and was ready for launch. And then you have also a letter from Albert Einstein to the president.
That's right. And in that letter, Einstein in 1939 is encouraging Roosevelt to get the Manhattan Project, which is not what he called it at the time, but basically get American nuclear efforts going, because his great fear was that the Nazis were extremely well positioned given the scientists they had at hand and the developments they'd already achieved with respect to splitting an atom of uranium and creating, they had the full potential, Einstein knew it, to develop an atom bomb at that point. So he warns Roosevelt about this capacity and the fact that the Germans have access to uranium to do this work, and says, let's get going. Einstein, as people may know, later said he regretted that letter because, of course, it initiated in many respects U.S. efforts, and the U.S. ultimately in Hiroshima and Nagasaki used that weapon, which was a calamity from everyone's perspective, and Einstein's in particular.
The book itself, and correct me if I'm wrong, but from my viewpoint, what I saw were three main characters, and that was Mr. Nash, Nurse Boyle, and then, of course, Hitler and the rest of Germany and all this stuff that's going on with the Allied bomb. The bomb and what they were trying to do. And Mr. Nash is a negotiator, but it opens up where he finds himself in an old castle.
That's right. And that castle is true to form and its historical role. It's Leeds Castle in Kent, southeastern England. And Leeds Castle, and I won't give away too much of the early part of the book, but played two extraordinary roles, hidden roles, during the Second World War. One of them was to act as a hospital, a hidden hospital, so the enemies wouldn't know to attack it. And then it played another role altogether, which was, some would say, instrumental to the Allies winning the war. So it's an intriguing castle. It's 800 years old. No book has ever explicitly been written about it before from a fiction perspective where it's front and center. But Leeds Castle, which has been called the most gorgeous, loveliest castle in the world, absolutely, I would say, is the foundation for this story's early part. And I came across it because, I came across it through research, and I had some nurses advising me on exactly what happens, because this negotiator comes into the hospital and is on his deathbed, and I had to get my medical knowledge from the 1940s up to speed, let's just say, to learn what it was like to look after a patient like that. And in this particular situation, the world's greatest negotiator, who's American, is shot up on a beach nearby, ends up at the castle in an infirmary, and the only person he can reach out to with the secrets of his craft and his mission is this young British nurse who has a troubled past. And that's the premise.
We're visiting with Peter Johnston. Peter is the author of the book, Weapons of Peace, The Nurse, The Negotiator, and Hitler's Atom Bomb, a novel. And some people may say, well, you know what? I was never aware that the Germans were racing ahead also to develop their own bomb. But you do a great job of kind of giving us the background and setting all this up.
Well, and we have learned, as I point out at the beginning of the book, a lot more about the Nazi efforts to develop an atomic weapon. In just the last couple of decades, there's a German, respected German academic, Rainer Karsch, who wrote a book called Hitler's Bomb, and it disclosed documents, exchanges, soil tests from around Germany showing that the Nazis actually had a lot more than people thought, and not just up till 1943, this is the twist, is in the subsequent 2 years as well, that their nuclear efforts started before the Allies in 39 and went right through to the final days of war.
So moving forward a little bit back to the present day, Peter, what does this tell us, the reader, the listener, about this novel, The Nazis and the Atom Bomb, and also what may or may not be going on right now with North Korea and Iran?
Well, there are a lot of parallels, and I wrote the book because, as I mentioned earlier, I thought it was important that these critical skills, which are even more critical today in terms of problem-solving skills, relationship-building skills, negotiation skills overall, that we all get better at them for our own benefit, but also so we can better understand the negotiations that we normally wouldn't be exposed to that our leaders end up in, such as with North Korea or China, or Russia, or Europe, in the case of the United States international relations, and so that it's not a black box for people, that readers learn through the lessons from this dying mentor to, as he informs Nurse Doyle, readers learn some very core, just as you know, a limited number of lessons that apply across all of these complex, extreme negotiations. And I think that's important today, in particular when we have issues like climate change, like trade deals, where we need to be able to better judge which of our leaders is well placed to have those negotiations and will be taking the right approach on our behalf.
Perhaps what we've learned from history, and here I am shipping back and forth to the present and the past.
That's great. I love it.
1960s. And the Cuban Missile Crisis. This is something that perhaps most of us may not remember. I was a little boy when this all happened. But what I've read, watched movies, this is probably very, very close to what could have happened.
In terms of, yes, parallels to weapons of peace, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. And by the way, related to the Cold War, the reason that we didn't know this, all the details about Nazi bomb making, is that as soon as the war ended, of course, we had the Russians and the Americans racing for these leading technologists who were doing this work on rocketry and atomic weaponry for the Nazis. And the U.S., we knew that we were heading into what we later called the Cold War. And so no one on either side, the Russians nor the Americans, had an interest in saying, oh, look at what the Nazis are doing. We can learn from this, because they didn't want the other side to know what they were learning. So this is part of why we have this veil over much of this information, and it's only in recent years that we've learned enough to understand exactly how far the Nazis were.
And I talked a little bit about shifting back and forth in time, and you don't do that a lot in the book, but you do set us in different time zones, periods. For example, right now I'm just looking at chapter 54. Monday, April 30th, 1945, 3:28 p.m., the Führer's Bunker, Germany. So you set it up there for the reader, and then as they go through, they start, at least I do, start to imagine what exactly going on there.
Right. That was trips to Germany and going underground, and in terms of research, which my family helped me with, my young children at the time. And yeah, there's everything in the book works within the confines of historically what we can confirm. And it took me, Louis, 2 years to write the book, and I'm doing that at 10 o'clock to 1 in the morning. And then, as my son points out to me, it took another 5, basically, to refine everything, confirm the research. Because I advise companies and governments, I felt more, perhaps, than some fiction writers beholden to making sure that the facts were as right as they could be.
So you've appeared on various news talk shows, programs on a variety of networks. So when you watch some of these stories and you hear about perhaps Kim Jong-un and President Trump negotiating, Mike Pompeo and perhaps somebody from China negotiating, perhaps anything that's going on, does that kind of bring back to you like, that is something that I found out in my research for my book, and this is something almost like you're trying to play along like we play along with game shows on TV?
There is a lot of guessing still. So it's the lessons that I learn from my work, because I've been involved in a number of these high-level negotiations, is number one, don't judge anybody from the outside. You can speculate, but you don't know exactly what people are going through, and they can't reveal it because of the sensitivities around confidentiality and most high-level discussions. So, number one, hard to judge from outside. Number two, I would say, is, yes, most negotiations that are in the news are mishandled to a large extent. That the mindset, for example, that I talked about earlier of being collaborative and forthcoming, of being clear about the game, being provocable and forgiving, which applies across all our relationships, people somehow lose sight of that. It has been time-tested across history in terms of best practice. And so if I'm ever shaking my head with some concern because people are, I think, making it harder than it needs to be, that arises, I would say, on a daily to weekly basis in my office.
We've been visiting with Peter Johnston. Peter is the author of the book, The Nurse, The Negotiator, and Hitler's Atom Bomb. It's a novel. And if there is a place, because of social media, Peter, where should people go on the internet to find out more information about this book and about what you've been doing in the past?
You can just Google my name, Peter D. Johnston, and you can also go to Weapons of Peace weaponsofpeace-book.com, and you'll find all about this new novel that I hope is a fun way to learn, an entertaining way in this infotainment world to learn more about these really serious issues around influence in our individualized as well as collectively.
Peter, I'm sure that other people have the same question I do, is, are we going to hear more novels from Peter Johnston?
Well, the question is how much of a demand there is. I've been told that there has to be a sequel to this one because of its ending, which I obviously can't speak to. So I'll be looking for the interests of readers out there to see what they want from me next. But it's certainly possible that I move back to nonfiction as well.
Thank you so much, Peter, for being with us.
Louis, it's been my absolute pleasure.
We've been visiting with Peter Johnston. Peter is the author of the book Weapons of Peace, The Nurse, The Negotiator, and Hitler's Atom Bomb. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Robert Lopez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.